UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
Time now for Fast Break Friday on the V Show, presented by Universal Windows Direct, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bob Valvano and Mike Pratt.
Fast Break Friday. He's Mike Pratt. I'm Bob Valvano. I look forward to this program every week because, first of all, Mike is a great guy, and we like him very much personally. And secondly, I like to come up with my theories of the world, and I know I can. Mike is BS-proof, so I can run it by him, and he can either say, yeah, you know what, there's something to that, or, wow, that's even goofy even for you. So here's my theory for this one I want to start with, okay? Strangely enough, it's baseball, but you and I love baseball.
Yes, we do.
Okay, last night the New York Metropolitans had a six-run lead.
The Mets.
Had a six-run lead going into the bottom of the ninth against the Atlanta Braves. They turned the ball over to Drew Gagnon, or Gagnon, I'm not sure how he says his last name. I try not to remember it. He proceeded to give up a hit. They got a force play, gave up a two-run home run to Ronald Acuna, who's one of the great players in the league right now. That kid's a star already. So they cut the lead to 10-6. He got another out. So now they have bases empty and a four-run lead. And he proceeds to give up.
Not two, not three, not four.
No, it was three. Gives up two more home runs back to back. Fastball, home run, fastball, home run. So now it's 10-8. So now they got to run one of the least reliable closers in the business out there, Edwin Diaz, to try and finish the game. They start the inning with a six-run lead. He walks the first guy. Now he's got to face the tying run. They had a six-run lead. They got to face the tying run, and he gets the last out, and they do win the game. But here's my theory about pitching, because this is what I believe.
They're only nine out.
I believe that the people who are in charge of, you know, talent scouting and everything have become so infatuated with the fact that a guy can throw 94, 95, that's all they look at. That's the only thing they're concerned about is velocity. And you and I, as an ex-player, even though you're a basketball player, know you give athletes a chance to adjust. They'll adjust to damn near anything. And so these guys eat fastballs for breakfast. You want to throw me, and they take it as a challenge. You want to throw to 97, 98, bring it. I'll be happy to try and turn it around. And so they, you wanted him to go to Mike through it. They bring these guys in, and I'm convinced that this is my theory. Pitchers do not know how to pitch. I don't think they ever have to learn how to pitch. It's like a basketball player who's so athletic, he doesn't know how to fake, he doesn't know how to change direction, he doesn't know how to plant his feet. They just get up there and they just throw it. They throw it 98 as hard as they can, and eventually the batters catch up to it, and they don't have anything else to go to. And I'll go you one better. Here's my theory about this. The pitchers don't have to learn to pitch no matter where they are in the order. In other words, the starter is expected to go through the lineup maybe twice. And that's it. In the old days, now we got to learn to pitch. Now the third time, all right, this guy, I got him out of the curveball. I got him out of the fastball in. I got to change things. They don't have to worry about that. Yank his ass out. Bring a guy in. And then the people they bring in are specialists. They don't have to learn to pitch. I'm a left-hander. I only throw curveballs away to let. No, I only face left-handed batters. I'm left-handed. That's it. I get two outs. I go sit down. I'm done for the day. And so nobody ever, because I listen to old-time radio all the time, baseball games. I'm amazed, like in a situation like this, a guy's up by five. He gives up a single, a double, a home run. It's 5-4. Nowadays, the manager would pull a hammy sprinting out to the mound to get him out. And I hear, here comes the manager. I say, oh, he's going to take him out. He talks to him and he goes back to the dugout. And he leaves him in because they expect him to figure out a way to work through it, figure out what pitch is working, make an adjustment. You know what the analogy I could think of? You ever watch a pro golfer and he starts and he has like three birdies and then he'll have a stretch of four holes where it seems like he just lost it. And then all of a sudden he gets it back again and he'll finish with a couple of birdies at the end. If that were baseball, the minute he made the first bogey, they'd yank his ass out and they'd throw another golfer out there. And I don't think you can succeed doing that. And you know what it is? They're all dialed into sabermetrics, these numbers. The guys in the front office say, well, Mike Pratt has a 220 batting average against this guy, but he's only got a 160 against that guy. Let's bring that guy in. So that guy comes in. He's wild. He walks Pratt. Now what are you going to do? You leave him in. The next guy hits a home run.
He might be batting 350 against
him. That's why they run 30 pitchers a game out there. But nobody understands how to pitch. Remember watching, God rest his soul, Catfish Hunter? That guy could barely throw 90, I think, probably. But he threw up, down, in, out, slider, breaking ball, change speed, go here, go there. He understood how to pitch. Nobody understands how to pitch right now, and I blame that on the scouts. I told you, not that Jamie was a pitcher, but my son Jamie, Nick knows because he went with him. They went to a tryout camp for a minor league team, independent minor league team. The only thing, they had them do two things. They had them try and hit home runs, and then they put him on the radar gun for throwing. They had a kid at shortstop. Jamie was playing infield, and he was taking ground balls. And the kid behind him, I believe, caught, you know, they get him like 10 ground balls. He threw like three of them so far over the first baseman's head, they went in the parking lot. But on the radar gun, he threw those at 95. They called him back.
Made him a pitcher.
All they care about. If you can throw at 94, 95, let's bring him in. But they don't know how to pitch. And because of that, you get games where the game like that is not over. I mean, it's a six-run lead, and he has nobody. Think about how many teams are absolutely at the trade deadline. All you heard about was even the good teams. What are they all doing? Oh, we need pitchers. Yankees need pitchers. The Dodgers need another reliever. Everybody needs a pitcher because, A, the starters aren't asked to go very far, and, B, I'm convinced they're so tied up into being specialists that you don't have a guy you can run out there and try. That's why I'm telling you the best rule change they could go to would be if you bring a pitcher in, he's got to face three hitters. That guy better learn to pitch a little bit now because you can't bring that lefty in to get the first two batters or the first batter who bats lefty. Let him do his trick. It's like a circus trick. Okay, you do your trick. Now you go sit down, and he's like, I'm done for the day. You'd have to learn to pitch and play the game. The game is suffering from all the specialization, and I think scouting is suffering because they don't know how to pitch. That's my take, and I'm standing by it. I'm going on my petard or whatever the saying is.
I kind of like that idea you had to start with in not a rebuttal, but a response. I like that idea about you got to face three batters. The problem is baseball is so deep into analytics and so deep into we're going to get six innings out of our starter period that to revamp something it's going to take a while, and I don't think the baseball teams would be willing to wait that long. You think about it. I mean, they've groomed a whole bunch of pitchers, and they've got a minor league full of pitchers. It would take a few years to get that thing implemented. But I like that. I mean, I like that.
You know, I'll tell you another reason why I don't think they'd implement it. It's like I remember reading a guy say there was – I don't know. You know, you're old enough to remember – there was all of this a guy named Marshall McLuhan. I don't know if you remember. Marshall McLuhan did studies.
The
medium is the message. Is the message. And what he talked about is they would subtly put like sex in ads. And so everybody suddenly jumped on board with this. Hey, let's watch how they're doing it. And so they paid these people to find what they considered sexually suggestive things in ads. And if you go back, it's probably online somewhere, some of the things they circled and highlighted, ridiculous. There's no way in God's green earth any rational human being would think that these are sexy. But you know why they did it? Because you have to justify your existence. If the conclusion I reach is, oh, no, there's nothing sexy in the ads. Guess who's out of a job? Me. So the guys that are in the analytics thing, I don't think they'd want that three-inning thing because they want to – they're feeding at the trough, baby. They want to justify their existence. I'll tell you who should face that batter. I'll tell you who should face that batter. You listen to me up here. The manager's just a necessary evil. I got all the answers up here, and it's not the game anymore. And not only that – I don't think they recognize that they're not doing any better. I don't. Is the pitching like lights out now? Look at all the home runs being hit. So the simple fact of the matter is, when they used to let guys work through things, I was amazed. I'm listening to these games, guy's getting his brain beat in the sixth inning. Casey Stengel waddles out there, you know, pats him on the rump, gives him the ball, and then he retires like the next eight guys in a row. I mean, you know, so it's like, because did you see two nights ago, the Mets did this? And I guess I'm following the Mets, but I see it firsthand. And Mickey Callaway's an ex-pitching coach. He should be well-versed in this. There, Steven Matz is pitching against the Braves. They're losing 1-0. Top of the seventh inning, J.D. Davis gets a two-run single. They take a 2-1 lead. Bottom of the seventh, Matz, keep in mind, has just retired 14 guys in a row.
Well, the books, the analytics, the metrics, the guys, count.
They have to make a change. So they bring in Seth Lugo. Lugo has one minor problem on this day. He can't get anybody out. He faces six hitters. They all reach base. They give up five runs, and they lose the game 6-4.
I think I saw part of that game.
Why? Because you're overthinking. The guy just retired 14 guys in a row. It's kind of like, Will Chamberlain in one game, the game he scored 100 points, made 28 out of 32 free throws. This was a guy that career had trouble shooting 40% from the line. Some nights, spit happens. And if you're a guy who understands the game, you ride that. You roll that. I mean, that and they don't. You're not allowed to do that because the front office people will tell you. The numbers say, they bring Seth Lugo in so Seth can get nobody out and we can lose 6-4. But we had the right guy on the mound. Maybe the guy, who I don't know, just got 14 guys out in a row. Maybe you could have stayed with him for another inning.
Well, the analytic piece, and I want to go back to something else you said. The analytic piece, there's no factor for human nature. And these guys are humans. I mean, they're not machines.
That's the point.
And they're going to get on a road trip. They're going to get out and have a few too many beers or maybe can't sleep the first night with the bed. So they're not going to be on top of their game, et cetera, et cetera. You can fill in the blanks. But there is no, in the analytics, to my knowledge, there's no plug-in for the human factor. They're going to look at purely pitches. They're going to look at who is up and who you've done well against. But to your point about something else, I was reading the Mets book, okay? And, back in the day, of course, there were fewer teams. That's one of the problems we have in all sports. There's too many teams.
No, that's true.
Okay, there's just too many teams and too many games. But saying that, I think that because that pitchers like Bob Gibson, Sandy Koufax, Tom Seaver, Jerry Koosman, okay, how about these two guys that didn't fire fastballs that could pitch? Ron Guidry.
He's not super fast.
No, not at all. And who was the guy that pitched for Atlanta when they were on their
Greg role? Maddux. Well, Greg Maddux. He didn't throw hard at all.
Not at all. I gave you two names right now that were terrific pitchers. Teams won championships, right?
Yeah.
With these guys. They didn't have
I'm
to
not
throw.
Even sure they would get attention today.
Maybe not. But they knew how to pitch,
that's
to your
exactly
point.
Right.
They knew how to pitch. And that allowed teams to go deeper with their pitchers, go a lot deeper. You remember Harvey, who was a knuckleball guy for the Pirates?
Now, you want to say Harvey Haddix, but he didn't throw knuckleballs, did he?
Yeah, I think he did.
He pitched two 10-inning games, like back-to-back
or
something.
Yeah, I think he threw a lot of that. But there's all been, in the history of baseball, all kinds of guys like that. Where have they gone?
Well,
Hoyt Wilhelm. How about
that's the guy I was going to say. I'm glad you brought that up. People who don't know the name, Hoyt Wilhelm was a closer.
Yeah.
They made him a closer, and the guy threw knuckleballs. He was a
knuckleballing
closer.
He was a one-inning, two at the most. I mean, he was a closer.
The guy was a closer. It's unbelievable. And the reason I bring this up is, you know, I'm always following Newsday, which is one of the great apps, $1.25 a week for like a subscription to the online version of the paper, and it's the best. Largely because their sports section, they still have a bona fide sports section. They still have columnists and
on the
writers.
Back, on the back.
It's a tabloid, so you go to the back. Yep. It's the back. But one of the things they're doing in celebration of the 50-year reunion of the Mets winning their first World Series in 1969, the Miracle Mets, is every day they go back 50 years, they print the box score of the game that went on that day. And you can chart it throughout the year. So like here, but I'm amazed that every game I look at, there's at least one of the team's pitchers, and likely both of them, went like eight innings, nine innings. Here we go. The Mets, on this day in 1969, they beat the Padres 2-0 and run their record to 64-51. They were still in second place, nine games behind the Cubs this late in the season, and they wound up catching them winning. But here's the line score. Tom Seaver
Eight innings.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was a doubleheader. They used to play doubleheaders in those days. First game, Mets 2, Padres nothing. Second game, Mets 2, Padres 1. They played 18 innings, gave up one run. First game, Seaver, 8 innings pitched, no earned runs. They brought in Ron Taylor to get the save. That was his 11th save of the year. And in the second game, Jim McAndrew pitched 7 innings, gave up one run. And then Tug McGraw pitched the last, so they had different closers, too. They didn't just have one closer. That's the other thing. Teams always said.
They had a lefty and a righty.
Lefty and a righty. McGraw came in and saved it. So they played a doubleheader. They played a doubleheader, and they used 4 pitches the whole day. You can't get through 4 innings without 4 pitchers anymore. It's unbelievable.
Well, to all of these points and back to too many teams, look at as a long-suffering Browns fan.
Yes.
Until last year.
Right.
Okay, the only other time I think we hit the playoffs with Tim Couch was there before he got hurt and didn't get a play in the playoff, right?
Yeah, it was a shame.
And so you look at baseball, and here's what you got, Bob. And this is why people go like, oh, baseball. You got the Blue Jays 30 and a half out, Orioles 41 out, and in the Central you have Tigers 35 and Seattle Mariners 28. In the National League you've got 25, Miami 13, Pittsburgh at 23, the Pods, or 26, the Rockies. How can you get excited about going to watch that team or turning the game on when, I mean, it's not even competitive.
Yeah, but I don't think baseball is an anomaly. I think that's a byproduct
of all the
haves
sports
and have-nots. Yes. I'm either going to – like the guy – I don't know if you saw the story. The guy sold – the Russian guy sold his – he owned 51% of the Nets.
Yep.
He sold his remaining shares to the guy who had bought 49% originally, and now he's going to own the whole team. And what he said, the new owner, I forget his name, said something very telling. He said, one of the things I'm proudest of is we've rebuilt this organization without tanking. And if you think about it, they haven't. The Nets did not tank. They didn't tank. They were always trying.
That's right.
And now they've had a breakthrough, and now all of a sudden they get Garnett. And I think there's something to that. I think players, even among themselves, I often wonder how much I trust a team that's so willing to just piss away a season. You know, you don't get that many seasons as a player. How many years you play in the pros?
Two.
That's
two
what I
half.
Mean.
Yeah.
You know, and there's more guys that do that than go for 12, 13, 15 years. I don't want to go to a place where, all right, well, they're going to take one of my 4 years where I'll be lucky enough to be in the NBA and just fritter it away so they can
be
good.
Three or four,
I mean, so I wonder about that. And because you wonder, what would make Durant, I think I said Garnett, what would you make Durant choose that team and not even let the Knicks be in the picture? Because the Knicks are so shabbily run. And
well, they're both, you know, if you look at it, to your point, they're both in the Big Apple.
Yes, okay. Same market.
The same market. But the Knicks have such a bad reputation.
They do.
About how they've run their operation
exactly.
Last 20 years. The Nets now have come back. They've worked themselves through a down period, no question. But they have worked themselves back to where they're a good place to be.
They've got a coach that's admired around the league, a young guy, good players coach. They like him. In terms of the business, you got to say the guy was smart. Pokharov, what the hell's his last name? I don't remember his name, but the Russian guy.
Oh, yeah, Popperoff, I think.
He sold the team for, I think it's $1.2 billion. He made a lot of money on his investment. So you look at it, it's across the board, no matter how you want to slice it, a success story. The value, they have a new arena. They helped salvage Brooklyn, which was absolutely in a crap hole. The value of the franchise went up, and now they're going to be competitive. And now they're an it team. Now people are going to talk about them with all the free agents they signed.
He also sold the Barclays Arena to this guy.
No, right? He didn't sell the arena.
It says right here.
No, the arena was not part of the deal. That's what it said. Well, that's the thing I read.
I'm looking at ESPN.com, and it says he agrees to sell the Nets, Barclays, to Saia.
I got to read that article. I'm fairly certain it said that the arena, because I was wondering who owned the arena, because it said the arena was not part of the deal. Prokhorov, that's the guy's name. You're right. Let me see. Oh, here we go. The deal for the Barclays Center is a separate deal altogether.
Okay.
I didn't realize that. That's why. So he paid $1.35 billion
for the
51% share, and then he's paying an additional $1 billion in a separate deal for the Barclays Center. You know what else this guy did?
That's amazing.
Why I kind of like this guy, Joseph Tsai, or whatever his name is. He also bought the New York Liberty from James Dolan. So maybe those women will have a chance to win because he got them out from under the curse of the James Dolan ineptitude.
You know what I hate about that the most? It's got nothing to do with basketball. This guy Dolan is being rewarded
Well, that's
okay,
true.
For being
inept.
Inept.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So he gets to sell this team and make money. And he was inept. He's been inept with
forever.
The Knicks.
Yeah. And you know what? He didn't even make his money. That's the other thing. If you want to be really snarky about it.
Did I get you started on
something? Well, his father was the one that made all the money. His father was one of the pioneers in cable television. When cable television came into vogue, he started Cablevision. Could you imagine having the Cablevision franchise in a city like New York, Manhattan alone? So he made more money than he knew to do with. Well, this is the kid. So as the old story goes, he was born on third base and acts like he hit a triple. He's never done anything. I mean, he really doesn't, you know anything about anything other than music. He loves
kind
music.
Those kind of people have over the years been able to find their way to professional sports in one of the sport or the other. You know,
because they can delude themselves into thinking they're competitors when they're really just
and
rich.
Then when they screw it up is when they get involved.
That makes it worse. That makes
buy
it worse.
The team and go away. Hire some good people. But when they get involved,
then you got
it's
serious
over.
Problems.
It's over. It's history at that point.
Hey, good news for local fans on the men's golf tour. Louisville's Adam Hadwin is the co-leader through 8 holes today in the playoffs for the PGA Tour. They're at the BMW Championship in Medina, Illinois. Great course up there. And he is tied with Lucas Glover and Jason Kukrek. They're all 8 under par. Justin Thomas,
Justin Thomas was leading yesterday.
Well, he hasn't teed off yet. Justin Thomas tees off in about an hour. He's 7 under. So Adam Hadwin, who's actually Canadian but went to the University of Louisville, is tied for the lead. And Justin Thomas, of course, who's from Louisville, even though you'd never know it because he's always talking about
Texas.
Bama.
Bama all the time. But he is 7 under, 1 back. So a little local rooting interest there. The Tiger update. He's even par in the tournament right now through, I believe, 6 holes today. So he's, I don't know if that'll make the cut or not. Do they have a cut in this in the playoffs? Yeah, they do. Right?
Yeah, they whack off the backside and move on to the, this is like
But you play the whole tournament, though. Yeah, but you play the whole tournament. They don't cut you halfway like a regular tournament. I don't think they do because it doesn't say anything about a cut line here. So I think you play the whole tournament, and then they lop it off for the next week so that you those.
Yeah.
But it's not a regular tournament like after 2 rounds where they don't have a
so
cut.
So Locke's not going to be happy or sad.
He'll be happy if he doesn't if he gets eliminated. But he's right now he's tied for 51st. He's 1 under par for the tournament, even for today. So he's actually 1 under. So he's tied for 51st. So there's still a lot of golf to go.
I think they moved to East Lake in outside of Atlanta for the championship. I think it's next weekend.
Is it that soon? Let's see. I thought they still had a little time. Nope, you are on your game.
Nice.
The Tour Championship is next week at East Lake Golf Club in Atlanta, Georgia. A total purse. You want to guess what the total purse is?
$10 million.
Close, $9 million.
Yeah.
Dang.
Tiger Woods.
I played that course before many years ago. Yeah, wow. Many years ago.
What's the most famous golf course you played?
Pebble Beach.
You played Pebble?
Yeah.
Oh, I've been there, but I've never played it.
I played both of
them. Oh, my God. You really were in the tall cotton there for a while.
Yeah, I wasn't. I wasn't paying either, so that was even better.
why am I not surprised? As Paul Hornung says, he's lived most of his life on scholarship.
That's a great saying. I like the one being America's guest.
Oh,
I like
the that. Rod Huntley? Rod Huntley?
Is that who coined that phrase?
Hot Rod Huntley.
Hot Rod Huntley.
Yeah.
He actually played with Moon Mullins' grandpa.
Oh, he played. He was a big star at West Virginia with the Lakers. Hots. He was America's guest, and he never hit the hip.
All right, snarky listeners who are giving me all sorts of spit about Mets, if you listen, I know that's really hard to do in today's society. It wasn't really about the Mets. It was about baseball and the role of pitching in it. And Mike, who's evidently brighter than some of the listeners, understood that that was the point. So that's what we were talking about. So those of you who want to be snarky, knock yourself out, but you're aiming at the wrong target because that isn't what we were talking about. We talk about the Mets on our regular show, and we will, and that's just the way it is because we're curious about that. Same way Locke talks about IG models. I don't have any interest in that.
And Haiti and Tiger.
Yeah, but that's what we talk about. But in this case, it was not about the effing Mets. Did you do any prep? Yeah, I did. I did the research on the pitchers, which is, I think, a problem. Baseball, if you love baseball, and many of our listeners do, if you don't, good for you. Mike and I do. And I think baseball has a serious issue on their hands about going forward. I think they've got to get with the new era of sports, which is you got to go faster. You saw in golf, the players have finally risen up and said, stop playing slow, for God's sake.
Yep.
You ever go to a practice round, by the way? They play, not to name drop, but because I think it's a funny story. I wound up caddying for Nota Begay for two holes. I went to see Fuzzy just to say hello in Florida. I was there doing something for ESPN, and he was playing in that tournament Arnold Palmer hosts at Bay Hill. And so
Bay Hill Invitational.
Yeah. So I went to, it was the practice round. So it was very relaxed. Yeah, yeah. So I went to see him. We're chatting and we had a nice talk and I said goodbye and I'm walking away and all of a sudden I hear from, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 yards behind me, "Hey, Valvano." And then you turn around, it's Fuzzy, and he's waving at me. And I walk back. I said, "What? We don't want?" He said, "Would you mind caddying him for a couple holes for Nota Begay?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "His caddy overslept. He's not here and he won't be here for like another half hour. Can you? And we got to go. It's our practice our time." I said, "I don't know how to caddy." He said, "Just carry the damn clubs. You don't have to know anything. Just carry it." So I said, "Okay." So I went, and it was him and John Daly, Nota Begay. I think it was just the three of them. They, Mike, I'm telling you, Daly hardly waits for the ball to stop rolling before he hits it again. It was unbelievable. They played like they had cabs waiting. They were going so fast. But my happy moment, I have to tell you.
Well, wait a minute. First of all.
Yep. And they were playing for money, by the way. Make no mistake about that. Practice rounds are always for money.
Fuzzy told you, don't have to worry about anything. So when Begay asked you the distance or what you think
he should hit, you looked at him and said,
"I know nothing. You Schultz him."
No, you know what I did?
Schultz him.
Nick likes this because this is the truth. If you go to Bay Hill, I think the second hole, might have been the third. It's one of the first three holes.
Beautiful golf course. It's a par three.
Yeah. Okay, so we play, we carry. I haven't said a word. All I'm doing is carrying the clubs. I walk to the ball. I put them down. He takes the club up. I mean, I literally figured, let me be invisible. Just the guy's not going to carry his own bag. So we play this par three. I haven't said a word to anybody for three holes. And Begay,
total Schultz.
Yeah, Begay. I'm smart. I'm not stupid. I'm not going to be yucking it up with these guys while they're playing for money. So Begay, it's a par three, and he hits it, and it rolls over the back of the green. And so I said, as he walked back, first thing I said, "What'd you hit?" He said, "I hit a seven." I said, "I told you to hit the eight." And the other four guys cracked up. They doubled up laughing. So he's a good guy.
You know, one of the last years I was with the Hornets, we had gone to Chicago where they had the workout, okay? And in Charlotte, they had a senior stop, and Bobby Nichols was playing then, just a special guy. And so the fellow that was running it was a friend of ours, used to come to all the ball games. So he called me up, left a message. "When you get back from Chicago," he said, "I've got a couple passes for you to come out and go around in you know, VIP section for the seniors." It was like on a Saturday. You know, it was a main day. So I go, and I'm out there and following him and going into the VIP section. And all of a sudden, he says, "Come on in." He said, "I told Bobby Nichols that you were here. He wanted to say hello and see you," because I'd known Bobby a little bit. We go in that locker room, and those guys are hilarious. I mean, just tell stories. And Trevino gives me a dozen golf balls.
Really?
He said, "Do you play?"
You're kidding.
Yeah, he said, "Here." You know, Trevino's a funny guy. He said, here. He said, "I got too many of those things, you know."
Nice.
He gave me a dozen golf balls. But they were funny, telling stories, getting on each other.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, now.
Well, it's a weird dynamic. You know that because you're competing with the same people you're sharing a locker room with. You know, a lot of back in the day then, a lot of them roomed together to save money. So it was kind of a weird, like, teammate rivalry kind of thing at the same time. It was kind of odd.
Because of that, I'll bet you don't see that type of interaction among the pros. Now, I know, I mean, the joke in the NBA is there's
12 players, 12 caps.
Yeah, but they were funny. And because they had to get along to a point, they were all in the same boat. It wasn't a big boat, okay? And it wasn't a very expensive boat, but they were making money. And that's what they love to do.
And the other thing is golf, you know, perpetuates that, which I love. The honor of... They adjudicate the game themselves. I mean, there's no real referees. I mean, Larry Nelson's one of my favorite stories. Here's a guy who called a penalty on himself in a tournament that nobody would have seen. He was addressing the ball moved. But the rules at that time, I think they may have changed. It was a penalty. And he told the playing partner, you know, he said, "You had a four?" "No, I had a six."
It was just like a hair.
Yeah, he said, "I had six." He was talking about the ball moved. And I addressed, okay, gave him a six. He lost the tournament by a stroke. Cost himself a win. Called something that nobody... anywhere on the planet would have seen or known about, but that's how you do business. There was another story. I don't know, maybe you heard this one. This was more recent. This was a few years ago. Guy played. He was trying to qualify. This story is amazing to me. He was playing a last hole. For the sake of argument, let's say he needed a five, okay? And he missed the green in two. Really hit a wild shot. He goes over. He plays the ball over there, and he hits it onto the green. He two putts, makes five. Everybody celebrates. You've qualified. He takes the ball to the hole. He looks at it. He realizes, it's not my ball. He played the wrong ball and went to the tournament officials and told them, "I played the wrong ball." They gave him two stroke penalty. Boom, And he didn't qualify.
And, you know, he could have shut up. Nobody knew. And everybody just cheering and clapping. Nobody's going to run up to him. Hey, wait a minute. That's a tailor-made. Right. You were playing a Callaway. Nobody said a word. I mean, that's how you do it. And I love that. I mean, so to some degree, there is a camaraderie there because they do feel a certain – it's why when guys are accused of cheating, if sometimes that comes up, that does not sit well with them because, you know.
It's right. Above slow play.
He does slow play, man.
Bryson DeChambeau is getting hammered from every corner about that.
So is our guy from UK.
JB Holmes, yeah.
JB's getting it, too. JB's getting it.
Brooks Koepka wasn't happy with him.
He's slow also. So it's a rough year for such a – the guy says that's what's called the gentleman's game. We'll get to a break, but it's a great point, though, because for such a quote-unquote gentleman's game, and it is the way it's adjudicated and everything, but they are ruthless with each other, though. You hear them talk to each other, the way they talk to each other. And like you said, if they turn on you, it's like a pack of wolves. Yeah. I mean, nobody's being benign. Like, did you see this? This cracked me up. Brooks Koepka was getting criticized. Brandel Chambly is trying to become like the
spokesperson.
The guy who stirs the pot whenever it's a topic. He's always taking these controversial stands on the Golf Channel. So they were talking about slow play, and he was talking about how the game is being run. And there's a video of he's showing about a guy being so slow. I can't remember who the player. It was Rory. And Koepka is standing like 25 yards ahead of him. Well to the right, but if you take the picture, you could see Koepka over there, but he's 25 yards at him. And Chambly comes and says, see, this is what I'm talking about. This is so rude. You don't stand ahead of a player. That's part of the problem right now. You see what's going on? And he wrote back, Koepka wrote back to him, yeah, listen, if it was you hitting Chambly, I definitely would not have stood there. But with Rory, I felt pretty confident he wasn't going to hit me.
Ooh, take that dagger out of your back.
That was pretty good. We'll take a break. Thanks for being with us. Fast Break Friday. Those of you in Lexington joining us, we love having you with us as well. And wherever you're listening to us, we got a lot more to come on Fast Break Friday. Jeff Greer is going to join us on the other side. We'll talk with him and we'll hear from you as well. 437-9680 if you want to text us. 502-437-9680. Stick around. More to come. It's ESPN Radio.
Hey, this is Mike Pratt. And do you know what sets a community bank apart from the rest? Friendly service, attention to detail, focus on making sure customers get what they need. At River City Bank, you will receive all of that and more. Be it a home improvement project, construction of a new home, or a bridge loan, their team is with you every step of the way. Visit any convenient River City Bank location or online at rivercitybankky.com. Hometown banking, hometown people, River City Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Did you know that the IRS is getting more aggressive these days? They're using private agencies to track you down and even started taking away passports. Don't wait. If you owe more than $10,000, take advantage of the Fresh Start Initiative, a program in place that can help you now. You can save thousands and possibly have your taxes forgiven. Join the thousands of taxpayers who made the call to get protection from IRS collections. Call the experts at Oxford Tax Partners now about the Fresh Start program. If you qualify, it'll stop the IRS collection agencies from coming after you. Let the IRS negotiation experts at Oxford Tax Partners get you protected once and for all. Call the hotline now at 800-575-1919. That's 800-575-1919. There's help for those of you who owe $10,000 or more, but it's important that you take action before these programs change. Call the tax experts at Oxford Tax Partners for a free consultation now at 800-575-1919. 800-575-1919. That's 800-575-1919.
At Witch Witch, they believe that a great sandwich has the power to make any day better. Witch Witch has launched their new favorites menu, including clubs with top quality grilled and breaded chicken, plus new shakes, including birthday cake, the famous Courtney's Cookie, and yellow M&M shakes. Two area locations, 221 South Hurstman Parkway and Old Brownsboro Crossing. Mention ESPN, you'll get a large build-your-own witch for just $6.80. Order online or download the new app. Witch Witch, superior sandwiches.
Your annual homecoming tailgate party was a rousing success. You caught up with your weird cousin Phil. You and your buddy Dave were crowned cornhole champions. Your famous potato salad drew rave reviews. The home team even won. But the best part was what didn't happen. You didn't drive home buzzed. You got a ride home from your cousin Phil, who may be weird, but also definitely sober. Drive sober or get pulled over. paid with funds through the Kentucky Office of Highway Safety.
Bright Spring presents the 2019 UPS Plane Pull, pulling for a purpose, benefiting Special Olympics Kentucky. You're invited to join a team to compete pulling a Boeing 757 or be a spectator on September 21st at UPS Worldport. Enjoy food, music, giveaways, and stop by the College and Career Fair to learn about UPS's opportunities where future you graduates debt-free. For more information, text JOIN THE TEAM to 33588 or to apply now, visit upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com.
Do you suffer from peripheral neuropathy in the hands or feet, continual numbness, tingling or burning sensation, balance problems, decreasing the quality of life? This is Mike Pratt, University of Kentucky Basketball Hall of Famer. I am here to talk to you about Dr. Anthony Sears, author of Your 21st Century Doctor. One issue that has long frustrated Dr. Sears, that many neuropathy sufferers are unaware of, is the potential dangerous side effects of the prescription drugs that they are using. They are unaware of recent studies that reveal the very drugs they're taking are actually making the condition worse. Dr. Sears' passion is showing patients how to reverse their neuropathy and live without the fear of the inevitable downward spirals created by the disease itself and the typical cocktail drug approach. To learn more, I invite you to his free seminar, Blueprint to Neuropathy. This seminar is free. Seating is limited. Call now to reserve your spot, 1-888-655-PAIN. Again, 1-888-655-PAIN.
At Class Act Federal Credit Union, it's all about the people and education. Class Act serves the educational community of Louisville and surrounding counties, including University of Louisville students and alumni. Ask about our honors checking account that yields 4% interest and allows $25 in ATM refunds each month. Drop your bank, join the movement. Text ESPN to 502-212-3167 to enter our weekly $25 Visa gift card drawing. Again, text the word ESPN to 502-212-3167. Visit classact.org today.
The year's best diamond buying opportunity is right now. For a limited time, Genesis Diamonds is doing something unheard of. They've cut the price on every GIA certified diamond. Now through August 25th only, all GIA certified diamonds have been marked down an extra 20%. 20% below Genesis already guaranteed best price on all GIA certified diamonds. It's Genesis Diamonds Spectacular GIA Diamond Extravaganza. Your chance to buy a GIA certified diamond the same way jewelry store owners buy theirs. In fact, don't be surprised to see other jewelry store owners and even diamond wholesalers shopping alongside you at this event. But it's for a very limited time, and you need to shop now for the best selection. All diamond shapes are included. Rounds, ovals, princess cuts, cushion cuts, pear-shaped, even fancy yellow diamonds. From a half carat to 10 carats, from $1,500 to $500,000. For a limited time, get Genesis Diamonds guaranteed best price minus another 20% on all GIA diamonds. Don't miss this chance to get access to diamond prices rarely offered to the general public. Now through the 25th only. And only at Genesis Diamonds, Shelbyville Road Plaza.
It's Fast Break Friday. We're back. The Athletics' Jeff Greer joins us right now. Frequent appearer on our radio station in various roles, hosting, guesting, coming here. And he actually painted the offices last week. Did a really good job. We appreciate that. Jeff, thanks for being with us.
Happy to do it. How are you, Bob?
Good to talk to you. Let's get into the meat of the matter locally here. What the hell just happened with Louisville in the last week with David Grissom? Apparently coming close to losing his mind completely and saying, there hasn't been enough damage done to the program. Let me see if I can throw a little gasoline on this fire and put it out. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure what else he could do with a deposition, right? I mean, I think that part is kind of stuck in a rock and a hard place. You're under oath. So those are always challenging. But look, I mean, I think... part of me has always wondered when you run into situations like this, what a person is thinking when they're in these situations. You know, like what was his thought process going into it? Did he know that he was going to have to talk about that specific stuff? How did he plan on addressing it? And I realize if you really truly don't know The answer to the follow-up question of who specifically are you referring to?
Exactly.
The best answer is, you know, the best answer is I don't know, but he's in a tough spot. I mean, he's got to tell the truth. So
yeah, no, nobody's suggesting he shouldn't be telling the truth, but the question is, I mean, it was a very, what's the word I'm looking for? A very thin layer of credibility to tell the truth, because that whole conversation doesn't follow logical English, does it? I mean, a guy says to you, one of our fellow board members may have been funding one of the biggest scandals in the school's history, and then they say to you, well, did he tell you who it was? And they say no, and he said, I didn't ask. Who in their right mind would not follow that up with the first thing out of your mouth would be, oh my God, who? That doesn't make any sense. So it's either...
Well, there is...
Go ahead.
The one thing that I was thinking is there is an element of human nature to think, do I want to know?
I thought of that.
I mean, I realize when you're a chair, you probably do want to know, but there's always the plausible deniability has been a common phrase at the University of Louisville for going on 5, 6, 7 years now, hasn't it? So you always wonder if there is an element of I don't want to know the answer to that question. So in order to retain that plausible deniability, maybe you just didn't want to ask that question. But obviously, none of us were there, so it's hard to kind of be in that situation. That's logically for people like you and me, that's definitely what you would think the follow-up question would be.
How much damage did it all do, do you think? I mean, you've heard some other colleagues of yours come on these airwaves and say, well, I'll be surprised if they don't get another postseason ban down the road. What do you think? And that may not be related specifically to that testimony, but it certainly can't help.
I think... I generally have tried to stray away from making proclamations like that. If others want to do that, that's fine. I think it's a really interesting situation because of the mitigating factors when you get into the FBI stuff about firing everyone, but then you go back to the institutional side of things, the program side of things, repeat offenders. It's going to be, in my opinion, by far the most complicated of all the cases. Maybe Arizona is the other one that would be high up the list in terms of complicating factors. But it doesn't bode well when you start adding in people at the administrative level revealing things like that. And it's certainly something that they can look into in an investigative side of things. So the key word in any notice of allegations will always keep telling people this: program control and institutional control. If those two things come up, look out. That's not good. But again, it's hard to make those predictions. Even now, especially now with the new complex case unit and all these different new committees that they've created, it's going to make it even more difficult.
Talking to Jeff Griff from The Athletic here. I'm not trying to be gloom and doom or trying to turn you into Nostradamus, but that's what we do here. We're just trying to kind of read the tea leaves, and it's unfortunate because it seems like they just can't get all this in the rearview mirror, Jeff. I'll be honest with you. It seems, if you're a fan, at the very least, that's certainly just annoying, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, it's a story that never dies. I mean, I think I'm curious if Grissom was, and this may be out there, and I've been out of the office this week. I've been up in the Cape with my family in Cape Cod, but
nice.
I'm not sure if this has been out there, but I'm not sure if he was interviewed by the NCAA, if that ever came up with them. So, I mean, that's the type of thing where it's like, now, wait a second, during our process, we never came across this in our inquiry, but this is now new information. How does that change that whole dynamic, too? I get it from the fan standpoint, and I would get why the NCAA would be frustrated with its own enforcement process. And I think that it just adds fuel to the fire, and it's a question of whether or not what's the statute of limitations on all that stuff as it is applied to NCAA stuff. But it's just the trickle. I'm sure they felt that way with Patino stuff as well, and the lawsuit and all those things also.
Mike Pratt's here with us, of course, and I want everybody here to listen to this and then get your both of y'all's comments. Michael Avenatti, who's a bit of a character, to say the least, there's a piece that Pat Forty, Pete Thamel, and Dan Wetzel wrote for Yahoo Sports, the headline of which is Avenatti Motion alleges Nike was willing to pay Zion Williamson and other college stars. And the question is about this, and Dan Wetzel joined us. What about his motivation here? I mean, you know, and is this headed to a settlement or what? Here's what he had to say about Avenatti, and then I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about that whole situation. Here it is.
Stormy Daniels attorney,
right.
Always arguing with Trump. He's, he is what he is. He is a nightmare if he is sick on you. And he is fighting for his freedom. And he has been, Nike claims he extorted them. He says he was just trying to represent a whistleblower. He got arrested. He's fighting for his life here. And he isn't going to stop. He isn't going to play nice. He doesn't care. So this is kind of the X factor in this, is that he's determined to uncover as much possible about Nike and show Nike was corrupt. And so you have a guy like that who's going after the biggest shoe company in college basketball and the biggest power broker in all of college basketball recruiting. Who the heck knows what, you know? I mean, this could peter out or it could be a lot. What other emails does he have? What other text messages does he have? What other proof does he have? What other people, that, you know, where is it going? So that's, I don't think that, you know, yesterday's story clearly shows that pretty much everything they accused and convicted Adidas representatives of doing,
yep,
the Jim Gatto and Merle Code, they were doing it at Nike.
Yeah.
And we always knew that. Adidas wasn't bidding against itself.
Right.
Stuff.
Exactly.
Okay. But it's Adidas that got nailed. It's mostly Adidas schools, Louisville, Kansas, North Carolina State. They got caught up in this trial. And of course, everyone sat around and go, well, what about the other guys? Where's Duke? Where's Carolina? Where's Kentucky? Where's all the other schools that deal with Nike? Why was only Adidas really gone after? I don't know the answer to that, but the Michael Avenatti is basically running his own FBI investigation. And, I, you know, again, you can take anything you want of the guy, but I don't think anyone would sit there and go, he's not someone who's capable of mucking things up and creating, finding dirt and going hardcore right at the throat of whoever heck he wants.
All right, boys. Jeff, what do you think about that? What do you agree with? What do you disagree with?
I mean, I think when it comes to that kind of stuff, Wetzel is as good as it gets, as knowledgeable as it gets, and I think he hit all of that spot on. I mean, obviously, I think when anything comes up with Avenatti at this point, I think it'd be dangerous to just say, oh, take it with a grain of salt. But at the same time, I think you know the devil that you're dancing with when you're thinking about everything involved with him and the way he's been out front and everything and flirting with a presidential bid. I mean, there's a lot there. But that said, I want to see what proof he has. I want to see what evidence he has, and I want to see what else there is. And Dan is right. I mean, I think we've all kind of thought this whole time there's no way in heck that Nike isn't involved in all this stuff too. Like you said, Bob, they're certainly, they've got to be bidding against somebody. So it's just a matter of time before I feel like someone else brought Nike up. I think it adds another fascinating twist to an already really weird, long, complicated story that has unfolded in college basketball.
Mike?
You know, you always knew Nike was in there because both those shoe companies are very competitive. They both have tried to get the best possible representation they could get. So you had to figure Nike was in there someplace. What you don't know is you do know that they're very strong in the grassroots, and anything has gone in the grassroots over the years. Hopefully that'll change, but there's a lot of crap that's gone on from all sides. So with this guy, Avenatti, I've got to wonder, what does he do so well to find this stuff out that the FBI couldn't find out? Or if the FBI found out, they don't want to release. I don't know. They're not releasing everything they have for whatever the reason. So he doesn't hold a lot of weight with me until he comes with some real evidence. And I'm not defending Nike. I think Nike's probably right in the middle of it, right with Under Armour and Adidas. But does that mean
that colleges are involved? That's the real question. If they're doing it at the grassroots level or doing it somehow along the lines of the Dawkins character in the colleges are or not involved, that's a different slant on things.
Well, he's got, I mean, evidently this guy got fired and he was the whistleblower. That's how he got involved. And he's got a whole crap ton of texts here that are pretty specific about money and amounts and within the company. There's a guy, again, it was through
money to players.
EYBL. Yeah. Willing to pay Langford, Zion, and $70,000. They should stay aggressive, get creative within the budget. They actually have a budget for this kind of stuff. So it's
promotion
hard to.
Promotion budget. Sure. It's a promotion budget.
It's hard to think it's going to just go away, but. I don't know.
Well, the Zion thing's gone away with that piece about helping the stepfather and a new house. Well, that just disappeared. And that came up strong, what, 2 months ago, guys? 3 months ago? I don't know. Where's it gone?
Well, that's the good question, because when this story first broke, if you listen to Dan and Pat Forty, they were convinced this was going to be like a major, the heavens fallen, and really hadn't played out that way. So I don't know where it goes from here. We'll have to see. Let me ask you this, though, Jeff, and both of you guys, before we only got a minute left or so with Jeff here. The this is also from Wetzel, talking about this 600-pound gorilla in the room, which is that they just refuse to acknowledge the powers that be, that these kids have a value. Here are his comments.
With these guys getting some money, or a lot of people would. I think what this case, and even yesterday, and certainly during the two trials, just proved beyond any debate is that players have an enormous value even before they get to college. And anyone clinging to it's about the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back of the jersey. Yes, you can get more popular by going to Duke. Yes, you can go more popular by going to Kentucky. But these guys have value. Brian Bowen, Tugs Bowen, was paid $20,000 by Adidas to play summer basketball after his sophomore year of high school in Saginaw, Michigan. He was not Zion Williamson. He was not the number one player. He was like the number 30 player.
Right.
But that, the NCAA wants to pretend you're not worth anything. You can't take any money. There's no money.
All right. What about that, guys? And how much is that, Mike, to your point, about more about the shoes and the value of the shoe companies than the colleges? What do you make of that?
Well, they've learned a long time ago. And Sonny Vaccaro got it all started. You get after these guys when they're young. Now they've taken it to the far right or far left, however you want to look at it. I mean, they've gone overboard in getting involved in many times the wrong way with these young players. But they decided a long time ago that's the way to go.
Jeff, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, and look, the longer this goes where the NCAA is signing billion-dollar contracts with TV companies and you've got 20,000 people going to games. And I mean, it's just, this has always been sort of where we were going to go, where it's this sort of cognitive dissonance between all of that stuff and the value of these guys and trying to argue that they're just student athletes and they're just worth tuition and board and all. I mean, it's always been this sort of weird dichotomy that was always going to become a real issue at some point, and that's where we've arrived at, and it's no surprise to me that the enforcement side of it has been where it's really kind of flared up in a lot of different ways.
We got to run. Top of the hour means we got to take a break. Jeff, it's always good to talk to you. Enjoy your time with your family, the Cape, and we'll see you when you get back. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Jeff Greer with us. Mike Pratt stays with us. We got another hour of Fast Break Friday here on ESPN Radio. Stick around.
listening.
With UPS, future you graduates from Metro College with zero debt. How? As a package handler, you'll have a great job while you attend Metro College, and 100% of your tuition will be covered. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at UPS.
We are ESPN Louisville, your home for the college football playoff, NFL, the Final Four, and best sports talk. Download the ESPN Louisville app today. Delivered by UPS Jobs Kentucky.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.